This podcast has bad words.
All right, guys, I know right here I just said platonic, which indeed I was looking for a friend first before a life partner, but the word I actually meant to use here was monogamous. So just keep that in mind as you hear me kind of ramble on about this. What's up, patrons?
Happy Thanksgiving, patrons. Yeah. This is coming out on Thanksgiving Day.
Yeah, man.
And so before we dive into our surprise questions today, Ryan,
yes.
Before we talk about creating an intentional life, let's read some more about Les. I have two articles here. One is one that I wrote, but I thought it was appropriate for talking about living the best life because we're going to be talking today. Someone has a question about Instagram, and I think sometimes we often see supposed best lives on Instagram. Mm. And on social media. And by the way, I don't think there's anything wrong with curating and presenting a beautiful picture or an experience in a beautiful way. Mm-hmm. The problem isn't that photo of the supposed best life. It's thinking that that is what someone's life is like in perpetuity. Mm. Instagram is a highlight reel. Social media is a highlight reel. Sometimes it's a low light reel for some people who are like, woe is me, woe is me, woe is me.
Yeah.
And the truth is, we don't live in valleys. We don't live on the mountain top. We traverse both. Mm-hmm. And that rarely gets expressed in 6-second clips or in a millisecond photo.
Well, social media also gives people the opportunity to, it's a shortcut to living a good life. You know what I'm saying?
It's a shortcut to...
They look at it as a shortcut.
It's perceived.
Yeah.
And so this article here is called How to Reach the End of the Internet. Earlier this month, I re-downloaded Instagram to upload a video of my daughter. I soon regretted it. After a few days, I was addicted again. I caught myself twitching for instant gratification, opening the app and scrolling through my feed whenever a free moment arose, just like I used to. I mean, what's the harm in looking at just a few new photos anyway? Then I noticed a new, quote, feature. Apparently, as you scroll, Instagram will inform you when you're, quote, all caught up. So I found myself scrolling even more because now I had a goal. Get caught up. It wasn't until this morning when I deleted the app again that I realized the absurdity of this notion. The internet is functionally infinite, and it continues to expand. On Instagram alone, nearly 100 million new photos are uploaded every day, so it's impossible to catch up. Same goes for YouTube, Facebook, Reddit, and the rest of the World Wide Web. No matter how hard we try, we'll never reach the end of the internet. So it's best to put down our phones, shut our laptops, and embrace the glow of the sun, not the glow of our screens. The only way to get caught up on the web is to avoid getting caught up in the web. I think that's I don't know about you, Ryan, but I'm a planner, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I'll put things on to-do lists just to cross it off. And it makes me feel a sense of accomplishment, but the internet makes me feel frantically lost.
It's funny, like, as you were reading that, I was thinking about the infinite universe and how when I think about the universe, I feel really small. Mm-hmm. I feel overwhelmed. Mm-hmm. I get frustrated because there is no end of the universe. We don't know what's out there. And we have an idea.
Yeah. It's ice wall.
But man, I have to like let it go. Cuz if I really start to dive into it, I could get lost in just exploring different galaxies and thoughts about how we're going to get there and life on other planets and what's the biggest star, which actually is a really cool like wormhole to go down to on YouTube or Google.
Right.
But there's a point where I have to let it go. I have to just accept, okay, I'm here now on this earth. We know the little bit that we know. and I got to be okay with that. But it's the same thing with the internet. It's like if I stress myself out over trying to find all the good things on the internet, then it's an endless pursuit and I can get lost in it.
Right. And I'm not a Luddite. In fact, the very last line of this essay, we'll put a link to the essay in the show notes if you want to share it with friends and family. Only then can we return to our devices and use them rather than them using us.
Yeah.
It's not about not using a phone or a glowing screen. The problem is, yeah, you know, I just actually read a study this morning. Ironically, I read it on my phone, but it was, I'll see if I can find it and give it to Sean to put in the show notes. Here's the gist of it, though. We are exercising less as a society. We have less time than ever before, or so we think.
Mm.
We feel like we don't have enough time to exercise, but it's only because we've spent more and more time in front of glowing screens. It's the only reason that we are not
exercising. But Josh, having a BlackBerry actually saves you on average an hour and a half a day.
Right. and so we are spending way more time in front of our screens, and it's going to shorten our lifespan because, not directly shorten, but indirectly shorten, because we are no longer exercising as much. And it's proven that if you exercise more, you will extend your lifespan.
Yeah.
Well, the opposite is also true. And so the more time we spend in front of glowing screens, that's less time we are spending exercising, and it's shortening our glowing screens are then literally shortening our lives. Another article I have here is from Derek Sivers, but I'm going to hold off on it for a little bit because I think it might actually help with someone's question.
Cool.
So we do have some questions. We were actually supposed to have Timothy J. Ward here today. We were going to talk to him about, he has a good video about why he became a minimalist. And one of the things he was doing was dumpster diving, but he wasn't doing it in for food or.
Yeah. Well, he wasn't a freegan.
No, he lived near a college. What was it? The University of Florida, right?
I think so. Yeah.
And, he noticed all these the rich college students at the end of the year or just throughout the year were throwing away relatively new things or sometimes even clothes with tags on them. And so he would go into a clean dumpster, get the furniture items, clothes, accessories, etc., and just bring them over to eBay and start selling them.
Yeah.
But then he got overwhelmed with all the stuff and he's like, I need to simplify it. And that's how he sort of stumbled into minimalism. And there's quite a few things I want to talk about today, but I think the best way to do it is through the lens of some of these questions that we have. So our first question for the Maximal episode here is from April. You want to read that one, Ryan?
Yeah. Is there ever a point where your true best life and your Instagram life are in alignment? Oh, April. Oh. Yeah,
if so, it's so exceedingly fleeting. There might be a point at which they converge for literally a frame.
Right? Yeah, I feel like my Instagram life does align with my life, though.
But that's my point is that your Instagram life
will
converge for just a moment.
Yeah, so Instagram shows these frames of my life.
Right.
Yes, but I think what she's asking is people who are... they are here's a picture of me CrossFitting.
Mm-hmm.
Get swole. The next post is during my journey of life. I love that, man. There's a comedian who talks about every Instagram influencer is my journey.
The writing on Instagram is the most vapid writing I've ever read.
Oh, it's horrible, dude. But regardless, though, it's like people who are representing a life that doesn't exist.
Uh-huh.
That is a lot of these influencers. That is,
however, maybe there's a good side. Let's say benefit of the doubt. If I'm thinking of someone like Jocko Willink, where maybe he's the person whose life does Instagram life does align most with his real life.
Yeah,
because every morning at 4:33 a.m. he takes a picture of his watch.
Mm.
And I think for someone like that, he's been doing that for decades.
Mm-hmm.
But there might be someone like Podcast Sean, if he wanted to start working out 4:30 every morning,
mm-hmm.
maybe him taking a photo of his watch and posting his Instagram is a sort of accountability partner.
Yeah, or it's like a trigger, like a good trigger.
And Sean at Podcast Sean on Instagram, he has at least 1,000 followers, I think. And so he could have 1,000 accountability buddies.
Sure. So yeah, I mean, but I think what this question is asking is like, we present on Instagram, a lot of us, not all of us, we present on Instagram the best parts of our life, but there's a lot of crappy parts to our life. So mm-hmm. is there ever a point where the Instagram life is actually your real life, where there are no crappy parts? And the answer to that is no, there's always going to be crappy parts.
Did you read the book The Circle?
No. But when I think about like my Instagram, for example, there are highlights, but there are also crappy highlights, car crashes and broken backs and things like that. So yes, when it comes to my Instagram life, every little intersection point is truly an intersection point of my life. But there's nothing on there that I am presenting that is making myself look better than how I actually feel. Oh, maybe that's what she's asking. Mm. Am I ever going to actually feel like how my Instagram life looks like?
Yeah.
And if it's not there right now, that's a problem. And you got to ask yourself, like, why is that? I'd get off of Instagram. If that was me, if my social media life was making what was looking better than how I actually felt, I would get off of social media for a little bit to focus on my real life.
So maybe what you're saying there is if your social media life or your Instagram life does not align with your real life, then you have sort of two options. You mm-hmm. can make it align in a way,
yeah.
Or you can remove yourself from the thing that's actually making you discontented.
Yeah. I mean, the third option is to continue doing what you're doing, but if you're lying, I mean, essentially that's what you're doing. You're lying.
Mm-hmm.
If you A, feel good about lying, or you don't feel anything about lying, either you're a sociopath or you're evil.
So it's an affectation, and I think obviously you're different than most people who are posting stuff to Instagram, right? I mean, maybe there are instances. I'm thinking of many of the comedians I follow, like Andrew Schultz or mm-hmm. Drew Michael. Drew Michael has been putting up a bunch of just like IGTV videos like of his stand-up sets. And so that, again, for a six-minute chunk, mimics his real life. I brought up the book The Circle because it came out in 2013. It's my favorite Dave Eggers book. They turned it into a movie, which was fairly good. I liked the movie, but the book is phenomenal. It's one of, like, there are maybe five books that I wish I would have written, and The Circle is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And there is, it takes place at this company called The Circle. It's essentially sort of Facebook, Amazon, and Google all in one company, right? Mm-hmm. And it gets to a point where there's, and it's in a near future, probably like 2018, 2019, and where everyone is, well, not everyone, but they're getting to a point where it's full transparency. Like people are wearing like a little thing around their neck that broadcasts their entire day. It's essentially Periscope or Instagram Live 24 hours a day, full transparency. And I won't give away the ending because there's something that happens at the very end that makes you think that you can go even farther than full transparency. And I think that, yeah, then it would align, but do you really want that? I don't, because I also have a private life.
Sure.
It's not a life that I'm not proud of. It is simply private. You know, if I have sex with my wife, I'm not going to broadcast it on Periscope.
Mm.
But I really enjoy having sex with my wife.
Sure.
That's part of my private life. Mm. It doesn't mean I'm ashamed of it. I'm not. It's just none of your damn business. Mm-hmm. And honestly, that's most of social media. What you and I use social media for is different. We have Jessica, who takes our words and curates them with certain images and posts them in a way to get people to think, to add value to their lives. If we're not adding value, then we're not willing to post it. I don't want to add to the noise. I want to whisper in a loud room, because there are some people who will show up and get really close and listen to that whisper.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you got to ask yourself, why are you using social media?
Yeah.
Are you using it to project something that you're not? Are you using it to communicate? Because, yeah, when I think about comedians, it's a tool that they use to help communicate their art, their creations. That's great. If you're using it to project a life that doesn't exist, then you've got to ask yourself, like, either Is it a tool that you really need in your life? Or do you need to start projecting your real life? But yeah, it's, if you're projecting a life that doesn't exist, there's definitely something wrong with that.
Yeah, unless you are an actor and you know that it's like made up, and that, that's, yeah, a, I mean, little bit different.
There's always an exception to the rule.
I guess what I'm saying is, are you an actor? And if not, does it feel good to pretend?
Yeah.
Because it probably doesn't. It's crazy making. And so...
It makes me think of that Joaquin Phoenix interview that he did with David Letterman. Do you know about this?
No, I don't think so.
He showed up with like this beard and glasses on, and it was just like this bomb of an interview, and mm-hmm. David Letterman kind of beat him up just a little bit, man. But it was for a movie that he was doing. So he was actually going on... he was doing a fictional movie based on a documentary that was reality TV. This. Yeah, dude, it was so good.
He had like a rap career.
Yeah, exactly.
he was becoming a rapper, and like he was trying to get Diddy to sign him.
Yeah.
All right, Bo has a question. How do you determine what your best life is? Sure, you can optimize the things you are currently doing, but how do you find the larger sense of purpose, a grand plan to work towards? So how do you find... So these are a couple different things here.
Yeah.
A sense of purpose, right? I would just say meaning. I think those two words tend to be interchangeable. You might mean something different when you say purpose. I tend to avoid the word purpose, and let me explain why. We actually just had Ben Greenfield on. Actually, he'll be on in a few weeks. It hasn't come out yet. But he was talking about he has a sense of purpose. I don't believe in a sense of purpose. That's why I avoid the word. I don't think purpose... presupposes that you were sort of destined to do something, at least by definition. Now, you can have another loose definition, right? And so I don't think I was born to be a writer. I don't think I was born to speak English. Mm. I don't think I was born to be an astronaut or a yoga teacher or an accountant. I don't think I was born to do anything. However, I do think that we can find meaning throughout life. In fact, I think we necessarily find meaning. Mm-hmm. And so when someone's a nihilist, Jordan Peterson talks a little bit about this. When someone's a nihilist, say, "Oh, I don't find anything meaningful." No, you do. You find suffering. We all suffer. Mm-hmm. The Buddhist perspective is life is suffering, right?
Yeah.
I think that's probably a translation error. I think the Buddhists really mean like life is uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But life is suffering, and so you're going to find meaning in that suffering. There's always meaning in the suffering. In fact, it tends to be one of the most meaningful things in our lives when we're suffering, because we can't stop thinking about it, right?
Yeah.
Well, the opposite can be true for pleasurable experience. So either find meaning in something that is pleasurable, and this is actually good news, because you don't have a purpose, meaning you don't have a thing you were born to do, there are dozens or maybe even hundreds of things that you can find to be meaningful. Mm. Well, how do you do that? Let's talk about that. Number one is you get really, really clear on what your foundational values are and then what your structural values are. In fact, I'll pull up my list of some of my values and we can go through a few of these. Now, Ryan and I wrote an entire book about our foundational values, right? Minimalism, Live a Meaningful Life is our first book, but it's about the five foundational values. Let me see if I can find my, here's my values, JFM values. Using the house metaphor, right? You have a foundation. I think everyone pretty much has the same foundation. You might tweak it a little bit, but it's gonna be health, relationships, creativity or passion, growth and contribution. There may be something else in there, but I think ultimately you're going to have a foundation. And then everyone's structure is going to look a little bit different. Even in a neighborhood with houses that look fairly similar, they have different floor plans, mm-hmm. right?
Sure.
And so the structural values, or what you might call core values, these are your sort of personal values. And a few of them for me, autonomy, which is like freedom from external control, certainty, which is... being reliably comfortable, having your basic needs met. We all have a need for certainty, right? Mm-hmm. Character, meaning living a congruent life, one that's congruent with all of your other values. Communication is a value for me, is a structural value. Communication, I define that as a clear exchange and expression of information. compassion is a value for me, a logical understanding of other struggles. And that's one that's pretty difficult, right? But having that as a structural value helps me see the world in a way that's different from my own struggles, right? Curiosity is another one, which is basically the desire to question anything. That is not a strong value of mine, but I am curious in many respects. And sometimes these values will lead me down the wrong path. I can get really curious and fall down a YouTube rabbit hole for 7 hours. Mm. And so it doesn't mean these values will always lead you in the right direction. You let any one value take over all the others and you start forsaking the other values, that is also a recipe for discontent. I'll read a few others here. Freedom, free speech, grace, gratitude, humility, humor, insight, integrity, intimacy, leadership, listening, meaning, mobility, morality, quality, respect, responsibility, restraint, self-care, sexuality, significance, solitude, trust, truth, variety, vulnerability, wisdom. This is the structure of the house that builds on top of the foundation. And then we have something called minor values. This is sort of the wall, the drywall to the house, right? Sure. This is what makes life aesthetically better, right? It makes life better in general, right? So for me, aesthetics are a minor value. Art, concerts, entertainment, the environment, music, investments, reading, style, teaching, technology. These are sort of minor values in my life. And so we're getting back to Beau's question here. How do you determine what your best life is? Well, this last area is unfortunately where we spend most of our time. They're imaginary values. This is sort of the...
This is like the clutter in your house.
This is absolutely the clutter in your house. So you've built the house. You have this beautiful, beautiful foundation. And you have the structure just how you want it. You have the walls all filled in. And then you just start cluttering up the house with imaginary values. For me, some of those are efficiency, ego, email, productivity, self-debate, social media, scarcity, vanity. Those are just a few, but these are the things we clutter our life with. They get in the way of living our best life, but they do provide some ephemeral pleasure. And during the minimal episode, Ryan, we talked about maybe we would break down pleasure versus happiness versus contentment versus joy. And I think now would be maybe a good time to do that, because I think quite often we're not living our best life, whatever that is for us, because of we want the instant gratification, right? It's the sort of marshmallow experiment where you put two marshmallows in front of a kid, or you put one in front of the kid, and if they don't eat it, you're going to give them one more five minutes later, they'll have two. Or if they eat it now, they're just going to have one.
Yeah.
And that is actually a predictor of how well someone is going to do, how successful they're going to be in life.
Hmm.
You do that experiment with a six-year-old. If they don't eat the marshmallow for the first 5 minutes, they're probably going to be more successful in life. Why?
You have better self-control.
Exactly. And you're able to delay gratification.
Yeah.
You have discipline in a way that that will serve you likely for the rest of your life.
Yeah. There's nothing wrong with instant gratification. I mean, there are many instances where we have instant gratification in our life. It might be with food. It might be with sex. It might be with binging on Netflix. However, when you live for the instant gratification, that's where it's a problem.
And when it gets in the way of real gratification.
Right. That's how it becomes a problem.
Mm-hmm.
So I think with, you know, the things that we talk about, simplicity, minimalism, whatever you want to call it, whatever ism you want to throw in there, it's really about finding that balance between living a meaningful life, living, you know, your best life, whatever that is, or living as close as you can to your best life. I really don't like the term living your best life, because you're never going to live your best life. The goal is to get as close as possible. And what that is to live a meaningful life, man. There's something else I was going to say. Oh, the purpose thing. So I think the word purpose is okay, personally. If you can look at it in a very broad sense, like the purpose of my life is to live a meaningful life. Like that is what my purpose is. Mm. That's very broad. If you're expecting this fine-tuned purpose, be like, my purpose is to be a pianist. I mean, maybe someone can thrive off of that, but like think about, who's the woman who plays the piano and she has that one famous song, Sky Steel was his
Vanessa Carlton.
Yeah, was her. Yeah, Vanessa Carlton. She's got that one awesome song.
And she has a bunch of awesome songs.
I'm sorry. She had that one like huge hit.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's
a great
Yeah, she's a great artist. She had 1,000 laughs. And when she wrote that song, she was like, "Oh wow, like this is it. This is amazing."
She was 16, by the way.
Right. This is amazing and how accomplished she must have felt. But then it got to a point where like she dreaded that song. I mean, she came to terms with it, accepting like, hey, look, this song got me to where I'm at, and I'm very grateful for that, and it allows her to have the audience that she has. But whatever you find, like her, up until she was 16, it was, my purpose is to write the best song ever. Mm-hmm. Well, she did that at 16.
Right.
Well, once you accomplish that one purpose, you're going to want to move on to something else.
Right, and that's why I struggle with the word purpose, because the thought of having a singular thing for a lifetime,
right?
I think it's going to lead to a particular kind of discontent.
Yeah, if you don't reach it, or if you reach it, regardless. Yeah,
maybe even more so when you do reach it.
Yeah,
because you realize This was the thing that I was living for.
Mm-hmm.
And what does Sam Harris say? We're always looking over the shoulder of our current accomplishment toward the next one.
Yeah.
And so the thing that once was going to bring you satisfaction, you thought, is now just a recipe for that discontent, because it didn't bring you what you thought it would bring you. And so instead of looking for a purpose, look for a structurally sound life. To me, that is the best life. It's not going, we talked about this in the minimal episode, but it's not the perfect life. And so I'm all for you living your best life, as long as I agree with you. I think the phrase has been turned into something trite, but in terms of I want to live my best life, meaning I want to be the best version of my 38-year-old self. And right now, I aspire to be my 40-year-old self. That's who I look up to right now.
Yeah.
In hopes that I'm not going to accomplish something grandiose. And in fact, sometimes those expectations, in a weird way, they stifle us as well. So if a decade ago, you and I would have been like, we need to make the most popular documentary on Netflix.
Right. Like if that was our purpose.
Right.
Yeah.
And even though we got it, then it's like, okay, now what?
Mm-hmm.
Or Rob Bell being on the cover of Time magazine.
Right.
Well, if that was his ultimate goal, then it's like, well, now what?
Life's over. It happened. That's what the guy did who invented the Polaroid. He got to a point where he like wanted to make this one invention. He got to it, and then he killed himself because like his life was hanging on making this one amazing invention. He did it, and then years later, he's like, oh, I've served my life's purpose, so now it's over. So again, like I don't have a problem with the word purpose, but maybe the definition of purpose is what I have an issue with. The broader you can get with your purpose, the better you're going to feel about the trajectory of your life.
And when you say broader, you don't mean lacking specifics. In fact, I think we want to get really specific on the values I just talked about, the foundational and the structural in particular, also the minor values that make life more interesting, beautiful, fun, etc. You want to get radically specific on those things. But when you say broad, meaning there's a lot of nuance in that.
Yeah.
It's not binary.
Well, I think what I mean is this, man. Like, think about... So 10,000 laughs.
10,000 miles.
Sorry, 10,000 miles.
Yeah.
I don't know why I'm having such a hard time remembering her name and song right now. But anyway, so take 10,000 miles. If your goal is to create the best song.
That's 1,000 miles, isn't it?
It is 1,000 miles. Yeah. Okay. So let's say, all right, just say your goal is to create the best song ever.
Uh-huh.
Then you zoom out a little bit. Like, why do I want to create the best song ever? Well, I want to bring joy to people's lives through music. Okay, that's a much broader purpose. Mm-hmm. Why do I want to bring joy to people's lives with music? Well, I just want to make people happy. Oh, now you can zoom out a little bit more.
Yeah.
So it's like, yes, look at maybe that honed in, that one purpose that you might have an idea, but really kind of zoom out on it as much as you can.
I think that's applicable all over the place, yeah, too. Because let's say, like, for me, I wanted to play basketball. I'm not going to make it to the NBA, right? Mm-hmm. I'm not John Stockton. I'm his height. Actually, I'm an inch taller than John Stockton. But he was a rarity. And I think if that's my life's purpose, I'm screwed then.
Right.
But, okay, if I start asking the whys that you were just asking, well, why do I want to do that? Well, because I'm really passionate about basketball. Oh, great. Are there any other things I can do with basketball that don't involve me being one of the 410 players in the NBA?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, probably. Maybe I could be an agent, or I can be a sports commentator, or, you know, whatever it might be. It's getting a bit more broad that allows some room for my own personal growth, yeah, which honestly allows room for contentment. Mm. Let's talk about those four terms real quick. I don't know the best analogy for this. I've used sex as an analogy before, and we can use it because we're on Patreon. But if we look at pleasure, like, pleasure is just an orgasm. Mm-hmm. Like if you're just having sex for the orgasm, you're missing out on so many other things, right?
Yeah.
What actually makes sex far more fulfilling? Orgasms are great. Right. I like orgasms.
Sure.
But I also...
this connection.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And so if you're only doing it for orgasm, then why even have sex, right? Because right. I'm very efficient at giving myself an orgasm. And so the question then is, why have sex? Well, there are other reasons. So pleasure, if pleasure is just the orgasm, then happiness would be, you know, one step beyond that, right? And then it would be the entire act of making love, perhaps, right? With someone that you care about. A step farther than that is contentment. It's being satisfied with your entire sex life,
mm-hmm,
which is great. And not just one encounter of happiness, which is also relatively ephemeral, right? The one sexual encounter, which is more fulfilling than just the orgasm, right? Mm-hmm. Masturbating is just going to give me an orgasm. Having sex with someone I care about is going to give me some happiness, but that is going to be fleeting. Having a fulfilling sexual relationship with someone, mm-hmm, is going to give me contentment.
Yeah.
Having a broader, you talk about getting broad here, having a broad, fulfilling relationship that happens to have a sexual component, which is pleasurable, is going to bring me joy, especially. And I think here's the component of joy that differentiates it from pleasure, happiness, and contentment. I think joy always involves other people, either directly or indirectly. And the times where we feel the most fulfilled is when we're helping fulfill other people. And I mean, that certainly applies to sex. You don't want to have a sex partner where they're just lying there like a dead fish.
Right.
You don't want to be the dead fish lying there. Like, no one feels good about that, mm-hmm, right? What we feel good about is when you're really into the act with each other. There is a reciprocity there. They are getting joy and you're getting joy. And then it multiplies. You get joy from their joy, mm-hmm, and they get joy from your joy. And it's so much more fulfilling than just going to the bathroom and rubbing one out. We have a voicemail here from Sean in Pennsylvania.
Hey, Josh and Ryan. My name's Sean. I'm from Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. In 2008, I started a 5-year relationship that didn't work out. I was single for a few months and then found my recent ex, and we dated for 5 years as well and ended our engagement this February. Since our breakup, I've been all over the dating apps and went on a handful of dates. I'm not exactly sure why I always feel the deep desire to find my other half, but I know I'm a hopeless romantic. My question for you is, how do you handle the constant itch to date and find someone and not cave when you're feeling lonely while you are working on yourself, and know deep down the only person you should be dating right now is yourself, so to speak?
I think the question's inherently problematic. I don't think Sean means it this way, but it's a cultural term.
Hmm.
Other half.
Right.
Which presupposes what? That you yourself are incomplete, Sean. You are not complete. You alone are complete in an empty room. In fact, I want to send Sean from Pennsylvania here a copy of one of my favorite, actually my favorite relationship book. It's a book called Some Thoughts About Relationships. It's really short. I think it's like 77 pages from our friend Colin Wright. And it is, it's the best thing I've ever read about relationships because it doesn't just apply to intimate relationships. It's great for friendships, business, partnerships, etc. These are structural policies that he has written for relationships in his life. And I can tell you this. I found the, I don't even like this term, the love of my life, you know, because I don't believe in the one, right?
Right.
In fact, I think it's really dangerous to have that sort of mindset.
Yeah, she's a love of your life.
Right.
Sure.
Yeah. In fact, I've been in love at least two times in my life, right? Mm-hmm. And I've loved quite a few people as well. And so, yes, I absolutely love Bex. It is, up to this point, the best relationship I've ever had in my life. But she doesn't complete me.
Right.
I don't complete her. Right. She's complete on her own. What we do is we augment, we accentuate each other in a way that where it's not like, well, I'm incomplete. I'm a 0.73 and I'm looking for my 0.27 in order to make me complete. No, I'm already a one and she is a one. And there's a beautiful sort of multiplication that happens here where we become much more than one because not only is it one person and one person, but it's our shared experiences together that make more than one. And so I could tell you, though, that I found Bex, and I think the same is true with Ryan, with Mariah, when I stopped looking for love. Like, I was open to it, and being open to these things, I think, is really important. Although there was a time where I was actually closed off to it. But being open to love, but not the expectation of I need someone else in my life.
Yeah.
Practical pro tip also. We were speaking about masturbation earlier. Before you make any love decision, masturbate first.
Jesus. That's funny, man.
You know it's true, though.
Yeah, to an extent.
What do you mean, to an extent?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
I mean, it's like, if you're thinking about cheating on your spouse, masturbate first.
Sure, or yeah. If you're thinking about going on a date with someone, you're like, I don't really like this person, but I'm really horny right now. Going out with someone just because you're horny is a bad reason to go out with them.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. I mean, Sean, here's the thing, man. He talked about dating himself. It's not that you need to date yourself. But you do need to be happy with yourself. And like when I went out searching for a platonic relationship, there was a point where, well, I was talking about this earlier in the minimal episode about how I chased money. Well, I chased women for the same reason.
Yeah.
I thought that finding a partner was going to alleviate a lot of the other pains in my life. It wasn't until I alleviated the pains in my life that I could actually go out and find a real partner. So I'm guessing Sean has done the same thing I did where you're horny, you want to have connection, you want to have someone who supports you. So you feel like going out and finding a girlfriend is going to complete you in some way and it's going to alleviate the other pains and the other stresses you have in your life. And maybe it does to a certain extent. In fact, I would argue that it actually does alleviate it a little bit. When I think about my past long-term relationships, I wasn't in them because I was miserable, but I was miserable. Mm. But there was these content parts of the relationship that really had me hooked. There was the connection, there was the sex. The worst was like the person's family. So like the girl's family that I was with, I enjoyed the family more than I enjoyed the girl,
that's a bad reason.
Yeah, it's horrible. But there are these things that a relationship can bring, these voids that it fills. But the problem is that if you're, again, Sean, it's not that you need to date yourself. The problem is that if there's holes in your life right now, a woman is not going to fill those. Right. So you find a way to fill those those voids that you have right now in your life, and then you go searching for a partner. So when I went searching for a platonic partner, I was looking for someone who complimented me, where our values, our beliefs, they were in alignment, where we could support each other, where I loved the person so much that I was willing to accept their differences because they loved me so much they were willing to accept my differences. So that is absolutely true, Sean. Like, you do have to be comfortable with yourself first. So where are you lacking, and how can you lack as little as possible in those areas? And then who can you bring into your life that's going to continue to help you live a meaningful life? But yes, relying on someone else just to fill the void it's a recipe for discontent. It's funny because what's the average divorce rate? Like 50%? I think it's gotten a little bit better since then.
It's a little bit better, but roughly half, yeah.
Yeah, roughly half. But how many people who are married are still freaking miserable, man?
Yeah, yeah.
How many of them are married just because they have kids? Oh, well, we're going to be miserable with each other because we have kids. And you know what? I'm not dogging that decision, but when
I think it's a terrible decision.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to sit here and judge anybody for that. So you can dog them. I will not dog them.
Yeah, I will.
Okay, great. We've decided Josh is going to dog them.
Uh-huh.
Okay. I'm not going to dog those people. But what I'll say is that before they got to that point, they could have really created a different path before getting to this point of obligation. So again, Sean, buddy, if you're not happy with yourself, it doesn't matter who you bring into your life, romantic wise or other. Like, you're never going, there's no one who's going to just come into your life and then make you feel 100% whole if you don't feel whole now.
Right. And so let's talk about whole. What does that mean, really? So the word integrity, right? Mm-hmm. Literally means, it comes from the same root as integer. And so if you're feeling incomplete, you're feeling a void, that means you're lacking integrity in some area of life. Mm-hmm. You're lacking integration, right? And so the reason that I am totally against staying with someone for the sake of the kids is it's pretty well documented at this point. It's not only bad for you and your relationship, it's actually bad for the kids. Mm-hmm. It sets a really poor precedent mm-hmm. for the kids. And so that actually lacks integrity by staying with someone just for the kids. By the way, getting with someone to fill a void is a bad decision. Staying with someone because you're afraid of a void it might create is an equally bad decision.
Yeah, absolutely.
Brooke has a question for us.
How do you imagine what your best self would do in a situation?
I wear a WWJD bracelet. What would Joshua do? Actually, I have a friend, actually someone I was dating, and she sent me a text. She was in line at some department store, and there was these impulse purchases by the register, and she was like, I was getting ready to buy several of these impulse purchase things right there as I was waiting in line. And then I thought to myself, what would Josh do? And she's like, I need to get one of those damn bracelets. That makes me think, would he buy this at the register? No, I'm not advocating anyone goes around and really ask themselves, hey, what would Josh do in this situation? Really, what she was saying is, with respect to consumerism, I had my values in alignment and I was making disciplined decisions based on those values. And she wanted to make those same disciplined decisions because she said that would be the best version of her. And so really what she is saying is, what would the best version of me do in this scenario? And I think it's as simple as asking that question.
Yeah.
Would the best version of me make this decision? Would the best version of me binge on Netflix right now, or exercise first and then watch some Netflix? What would the best version of me do?
Right.
And we're not always going to live up to the best version of ourselves, but it's a question worth asking. If you ask that question, it might help you move in the right direction.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, another way to look at it is, what do I wish I would do right now? Well, then do it. Mm. Then absolutely do that.
Yeah.
Our next question is from Humanus.
Humanus.
Is happiness the best goal in life? No. Happiness is not the best goal in life. It's funny because when I was a kid, I remember having this brilliant, epiphany, because as a kid, I remember seeing it on TV, or you hear adults talk about it, you know, what is the point of life? What is the whole purpose of life? And I remember as a child, I thought, oh, God just wants you to be happy. It's the goal of life is to just be happy. Everything we do serves happiness. And like for the longest time, that was my goal, was to be happy. But the problem is that as I got older, I started to realize how ephemeral happiness was. And because of that, I started to chase a bunch of ephemeral things. Mm-hmm. And arguably, there are some great drugs out there that you can take to make yourself happy.
Right.
But if you're happy sitting in the gutter drooling on yourself, like, are you really happy?
Right.
Well, actually, yeah. I mean, arguably, you could say that you are happy.
Right. But are you content? No, you're not. Are you experiencing joy where you're contributing to other people? No, certainly not. So let's talk about, if happiness isn't the goal, what are some better goals than happiness? For me, love is one. Not getting love, but experiencing love, feeling love toward others.
Yeah.
Even people, I mean, if you can get to this sort of Zen level of loving people that are your enemy, love thy enemy, is that is objectively better to me than just happiness, right?
Yeah.
Contribution is a better goal than happiness. Contentment. We just talked about contentment and joy. Those are better goals than happiness. Integrity.
Is a
better goal than integrity. Just means your values are aligned with your actions. Or do you feel integrated? Maybe to me, peace and calm and stillness, these are better goals than happiness.
Yeah,
I would rather search for stillness or calm or inner peace than happiness.
Yeah, I would rather be able to deal appropriately with unhappiness than just be happy all the time.
Yeah.
It's the same. It's what I was talking about in the minimal episode. It's life is a shit tornado. Mm-hmm. And I'd rather be able to look in the mirror and see myself covered in shit and smile rather than try to live a life where I was like trying to live as squeaky clean as possible.
That smile is so important too. In fact, the smiles are contagious, right? Mm-hmm. When you see someone smiling real big, it's hard not to smile back, even if you're not in the best mood. And so to me, smiling is probably, now often you smile when you're happy, right? But smiling might be at least a better objective than happiness, because it's contagious and it's at least in some small way contributing to other people.
Yeah. So what is the goal to life, Josh?
I think the goal to life is to eat as much ice cream as possible.
That's what heaven is, and not get fat.
Yeah, I mean, that's pleasure. Never mind. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, though. Like, we often, in the moment, it's like, I'm going to gorge on this thing. And that's what happiness is to a great extent. The metaphor I just used, an orgasm versus a one-night stand sexual encounter. A one-night stand sexual encounter will make you happy.
Yeah,
but it will dissipate, and around the bend, now you're gonna have to do another one, and now I have to have a threesome, and now I have to do like all these other things. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with having sex with someone,
yeah.
Even if it's not a long-term relationship, as long as you're being safe, it's totally fine. That will bring you some happiness, but if we're chasing pleasure, and forsaking joy, contentment, contribution, love, man. That doesn't seem to be the objective at all.
No, I think the objective is to live a meaningful life, because when you strive to live a meaningful life, happiness will come, pleasure will come, joy will come. Like those things, it's a byproduct of living a meaningful life. Also, there will be some valleys and you'll have some shit times, but living just for happiness, you're going to... happiness fades. Happiness is ephemeral. So if you're living for something that's ephemeral, you're always gonna live a discontented life.
Jan says, "Will your definition of what constitutes a best life change over time?"
Of course.
Yes, necessarily. Yeah. And we talked about that in the minimal episode, so I won't harp on it other than to say, if you are 5 years old, your best life looks considerably different from a 55-year-old's.
When I was in the fourth grade, I remember imagining being so rich, I could fill a swimming pool with those little rectangle pizzas that we got.
So what, you were Scrooge McDuck of with like
with pizza
bites?
With crappy lunch pizza.
And now he wants gourmet pizza to swim in.
Right, exactly.
Genevieve says, I'm 19 and my best life is finding the things that excite me and doing the things that scare me. And then I put here, but there's someone else said, their name is Cornish Palm, said, your best life is one without worry or anxiety. I loved the contrast here. Genevieve's best life is doing things that excite me and that scare me. And then Cornish says, your best life is without worry or anxiety.
Yeah, so that's good.
I think this just really illustrates that your best life, like Genevieve's best life, is her idea of a best life is so much different from Cornish Palm's idea of a best life.
And which then, is good, man, because that just shows you there isn't one particular template for a best life.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the question here from Cornish was, how can society affect your quest to reach your best life? I mean, I think Ryan just proved this with, I mean, basically the only reason he wanted to swim in pizza bites was because he saw Scrooge McDuck swimming in money, and he was like, what would be better than money?
Pizza. And I could just, every stroke I took, I just imagined like, taking a bite of pizza.
Burning my arm each time. Ow.
Isn't it funny, like, as a kid, like, what you just imagine stuff and you just don't think about the reality of it. It's just, like, the instant pleasure.
I remember watching the Flintstones and how Fred would always eat those giant turkey legs. I want one of those giant turkey legs so bad. So, yeah, of course, we're influenced by society, but really, we're more than society. We are influenced by two things. One is the media.
Mm.
And the five people who are closest to us.
Yeah.
The media has just become the sixth person who's closest to us.
And so, and the people we emulate too.
Right. And we tend to emulate the people that we see in the media that we look up to. And usually that's affected. We talked about affects earlier. So that's the Instagram life, but we see it on TV, we see it in the watch ads, we see it on billboards, etc. And then we see the five people who are closest to us, the five people we spend the most time with, and we tend to emulate them, whether it's in dress or speech, activity, hobbies. And if those people are doing things that are not ideal for our life, they're dragging us down, and we need to distance ourselves from people like that. And guess what? It's totally okay for you to distance yourself. And by the way, it's actually simpler than you might think. If you have toxic people in your life, you can distance yourself by not engaging with them.
Yeah.
You don't have to respond to a text message.
No.
You don't have to return someone's phone call. Generally, you don't have to see someone unless you live in the same house with them.
Right. And even if you do, you can still love them from a distance.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Dude, the problem here too is that if you're looking towards society to tell you what your best life is, it's a farce. Like, everything you see in the media, it's all fake news. It's always been fake news.
Mm-hmm.
You're never getting the whole story. You're always getting the hyperbolic version of the story.
You're getting breaking news. Well, yeah. It's really broken news.
Right. When you go to Instagram, Facebook, you're looking at fake lives. So whatever society is telling you, and you're trying to emulate what society is saying that you should do, you'll never find happiness. So stop looking at society for the template. Stop looking at society. It's okay to look at ingredients and decide whether or not that ingredient adds to what a meaningful life is for you, but you first have to figure out what a meaningful life is for yourself. And then you start to take in ingredients. But to just start taking in ingredients and applying those, that's a recipe for discontent.
Well, absolutely. And by the way, these ingredients often don't match up together. It's putting salmon in the apple pie. You're like, these two things are really good on their own. I saw this one person who was living the salmon life. The other person was living the apple pie life. And I'm going to mush these together. Well, no, it's probably not going to work for you.
Yeah. Josh, who has made you laugh the most in your life? Shannon really wants to know.
I mean, definitely you. There's no question. Like, there's.
That's so funny. I've made myself laugh the most too in my life. I think that's why you and I were best friends. I mean, yeah, I joke around about how we were fat little fifth graders, and I saw someone who I could like bond over, like, you know, cheese fries and cheeseburgers and other cheese related products with. But like from the first time we started hanging out, dude, we just like really cracked each other up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I always remember laughing my ass off with
you. For sure.
Yeah. We still do.
Well, this is Patreon, so I could talk about this. I laugh when I orgasm. You know this because we've lived together. Not that you've ever given me an orgasm.
I just thought that. Oh, I thought that was the girl laughing at you when you orgasm. You have such a high pitched laugh.
So like, in that respect, Pribex has made me laugh second most in my life. But yeah, and I can think of. The hardest I ever laughed, you were there, it was Theo Vaughn. We were at the Comedy Store, and he had that falcon joke about the, I've got an app that tells me every time a falcon dies.
Yeah.
And he pulls out his phone and he says, there it is, minus one falcon. But like the way, he has a particular cadence that like,
yeah.
He's almost like Norm MacDonald, where like, Norm MacDonald can say something and he's just like, hey, you ever gone to the store? And it's like the way he says it, you're like, what?
Ah! I have gone to the store.
I feel like Theo Vaughn does the same thing, but consistently laughing. Like, yeah, but you and I, we do this thing. We have the most inside jokes.
Oh yeah.
That they clearly would not be funny to anyone else.
No.
And when
It's so like we'll be together and like. Bex and Mariah will be with us.
That's exactly what I was about to say.
Oh, yeah. And they're both just looking at it. Like, we're cracking up about something, and they're just like, I don't get it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have to explain it, and it kills the joke.
Right, right. Every time.
Yeah.
Every time. Last question here. Remy says, is a, quote, best life even achievable?
Is it possible?
Well, here's the what's the Henry Ford quote podcast, Sean? Whether you think it's possible or you think it's impossible, you're right.
Yeah.
I think that's it. Yes, as long as your expectation isn't a perfect life. A best life.
But isn't best synonymous with perfect?
No, hell no. No? Hell no.
No?
No, not at all. Not at all.
Hmm.
In fact...
Well, I think maybe... Well, maybe that's obvious to you, but that's not obvious to me, and I think a lot of other people...
I think you're right. We conflate it. And,
yeah.
And as a society, we especially conflate it. And so what I'm trying to say here is a best life is a landscape,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
And we want to spend fewer time in the valleys, for sure. We want to spend more time on the peaks, but you don't want to stay at the peak. That gets boring. Mm-hmm. You want to traverse throughout the landscape. And to do so, you're going to have to go through some valleys. 2019 has been the hardest year of my life because of my health. Mm. But it has added a new perspective and a new appreciation, and even a new gratitude. And I can even see the gratitude that's on the horizon because I'm a long ways away. I'm about 20% better from what I was this summer. And that means I have 80% to go. And that's unfortunate. But I can see at least what is available to me. And one thing that's available to me is a particular kind of gratitude. But I don't have to wait to get to that end zone to feel gratitude.
Right.
I can start to feel that gratitude now. And I'm sure I'll feel more of it as I build that gratitude muscle. I'm not particularly religious, but I found myself you might call it prayer, but just expressing gratitude at different intervals. When I wake up in the morning, when I eat a meal. And I could certainly see, like, it's the power of prayer in many extents, but it is for me just being thankful for what I do have. It's that the Sam Harris thought experiment we were talking about earlier. You know, what would I pay to not be paralyzed? Like if I got paralyzed right now, what would I pay to get out of that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, so what I'd pay $1 million. Okay. So what I'm really saying is I'd pay $1 million to be where I am right now.
Yeah.
Well, man, I should feel grateful for that then, right? Because I don't have to pay $1 million to be where I'm at right now. I get to be where I'm at right now. It's not perfect, but it's the best I can do given the resources and life that I have been presented. And so living my best life is simply doing the best that I can do with the resources that I have, knowing that it's absolutely not going to be perfect.
Amen.
You know what, Sean? I think we should probably end with Vanessa Carlton's Thousand Miles at the end of this episode.
We probably should.
It's a damn good song. I really like her whole catalog. But
oh, yeah. She's a brilliant artist.
So talented.
Yeah.
All right, y'all. That's it. Patreon. Thank you for being a supporter. Happy Thanksgiving to you. We are thankful for you.
Gobble, gobble.
Love people, use things. We'll see you next time.
Thanks, y'all.
Making my way downtown, walking fast, faces pass and I'm homebound. Staring blankly ahead, just making my way through the crowd. And I need you, and I miss you, and now I wonder if I could fall into the sky. Do you think time went past me by? 'Cause you know I'd walk 1,000 miles if I can just see you tonight.